Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up on today's program, the Seraphic Doctor of the Church. On the feast day of Saint Bonaventure, we explore the figure of this 13th century Franciscan and mystic who is known for his great contributions to theology and philosophy. New guidelines for seminarians. We report on a course hosted by the Congregation for Clergy to discuss a revised handbook of best practices for priestly formation. And how starvation and drought are stalking East Africa. An official from the Catholic Development Agency, CAFOD, updates us on the severe hunger problem afflicting 16 million people across this region. July the 15th is the feast day of Saint Bonaventure, who is often called the Seraphic Doctor of the Church. Born in central Italy, Bonaventure was a leading medieval theologian who was elected Minister General of the Franciscans in 1257. He was noted as a man who had the rare ability to reconcile diverse traditions in theology and philosophy and was able to restore peace within the Franciscan order that had been racked by internal discord. Later in his life, Bonaventure was named Cardinal Bishop of Albano in Italy by Pope Gregory X. Veronica Scaresbrook shines the spotlight on this much-revered 13th-century saint with the help of Father Rick Martignetti, a Franciscan priest and author of a book entitled St. Bonaventure's Tree of Life.
St. Bonaventure, this man who I knew was formed in the shadow of St. Francis. Living out the spirit of poverty and authentic love, taught by this more popular saint. What was, I thought to myself, so special about this so-called seraphic doctor? And what exactly was his link to St. Francis, anyway? I turned to a Franciscan from the Order of Friars Minor, who teaches Franciscan spirituality, in an effort to better understand. He put it in a nutshell for me. Let's listen.
What Francis did in the world, Bonaventure wrote up for us.
Father Rick Martignetti knows Saint Bonaventure well, having created a study of one of this saint's most poetic texts by the inspiring title of The Tree of Life. A study in which he uses words such as fruits and roots, but more often obscure expressions such as coincidence of opposites. Not really the average person's idea of bedside reading. I pondered how could I possibly coax Father Rick to break away from this erudite text, turn Bonaventure the scholar into a friendly saint for the people of today, one who could reach out to them in a meaningful way. I tried hard to unshackle his patience, but he was game enough, in turn inviting me to unshackle my imagination, helping me pick up the heartbeat of this man from the 13th century. To begin with, I chose to ride a familiar wave, that of creation and St. Francis. A lot of people think of St. Francis as being close to creation in general. What about St. Bonaventure?
He himself was fascinated by nature and by creation. It's like he presented on paper kind of what Francis did. So we have one of his works, for example, is The Soul's Journey into God. And it's a way of us, normal people, average people, getting closer to God through meditation, like Francis did. And one of the things Bonaventure proposes in that work is meditation on creation. He says we can meditate on anything that God has made, and that meditation can lead us to appreciate the beauty of the Creator. So he was fascinated by beauty. And there's a Swiss theologian, Balthasar, who says that Bonaventure probably talks about beauty more than any other theologian. Fascinated in letting the beauty of creation lead us to appreciate the beauty of the Creator. And of course, from that, we come to the beauty of Jesus Christ, which really enthralled Bonaventure. But to appreciate the beauty of Jesus Christ, you need to look a little deeper.
So I asked, thinking back to my bedside reading, what would looking even deeper mean exactly? I wasn't ready for the reply.
Bonaventure would look to the cross of Christ and say, at first, it's repulsive. You know, at first, the cross is just an instrument of torture and death and human suffering. But if we look deeper, we see the love that made the cross happen. We see the love that sent our God to the earth and that kept our God true to us, even though it meant death on the cross. Jesus' sacrifice is a great act of love and not giving up on us. And Bonaventure felt that if we sat before the cross and meditated on the cross long enough, we'd see past the pain and see through to the love. Felt was the experience of Francis, who at the end of his life actually received the sacred stigmata. Francis received the five wounds in his hands, his feet, and in his side that Jesus had received on the cross, because Francis wanted to experience the same love that Christ had experienced for us. And he came to see that that would happen through the pains and sufferings of the cross.
From the beauty of creation to the cross, that was one great leap. At this point, I felt I needed to touch base once again.
I think one of the reasons Bonaventure is fascinating, and one of the reasons Pope Benedict probably found him so fascinating, is for Bonaventure, the way to wisdom is through holiness. Sometimes in our modern days, we think we can do theology as only an intellectual exercise, that it can be something separate from our relationship with God. And for Bonaventure, that would have been a completely foreign concept. You can't learn about God intellectually unless you experience God in your heart. So Bonaventure says, we can get to wisdom, we can discover the truths about God, but we need to get there through holiness. And holiness means having a relationship with Jesus Christ, falling in love with Jesus Christ, living his doctrine. Then we come to appreciate the truths of who God is. Sometimes in our modern day, we think that can be separated, that you can have an intellectual knowledge of God without an experiential knowledge of God. And for Bonaventure, that was just not possible.
Deeper and deeper. So I asked, how about an image to illustrate Bonaventure?
Another image that's been suggested, again, by Balthasar, the Swiss theologian, is when we stand before a work of art. We can look at it, how it was made. You can look at the frame. You can look at the brush strokes. You can analyze the art of the period. And that's all well and good. But to really appreciate the beauty of a work of art, you need to let yourself be carried outside of yourself. You need to be lifted up in awe at the beauty that's before you. That's that's when you really appreciate it, and that's when you really have an understanding of what the art is. And as Balthazar points out, that was Bonaventure's experience of Jesus. It wasn't just an intellectual, heady experience. He let himself be carried out of himself in awe, in love at just how wonderful Jesus Christ really is and what Christ did for us. And that's what he tried to capture, and that's what he tried to put on paper to lead us as well into that type of relationship with Jesus. And so Bonaventure proposes that we can all enter into a mystical journey that gets us closer and closer to Christ if we let ourselves fall in love with Jesus.
He's often called the Prince of the Mystics, Bonaventure, isn't he? What is a mystic exactly?
There's different schools of thought as to what a mystic is. One of the best definitions I like is that a mystic is just a person who lives with a constant awareness of God. Just knowing that God is present in every moment and doing everything for God and with God. So that the writer can write with God, and the singer sings with God, and the preacher preaches with God. And a mystic, I think someone like Bonaventure, teaches us to just make God part of everything. And that's the secret of getting closer to God, just calling to mind God's presence in our daily lives, no matter what we're doing. I think one of the things Bonaventure has to offer us today is that he calls us to a greater dependence on God, to know our God personally and to engage our God as a loving friend. Bonaventure talks about prayer so often. He depended on prayer. He looked at St. Francis and saw that St. Francis had become a prayer himself, doing everything with and for God. And, you know, Bonaventure challenges theologians who try to do theology without prayer. He calls the friars and the sisters who had consecrated themselves as religious, and he challenges them, saying, a religious who doesn't pray carries around a dead soul in a living body. That's how firm he was about it. Prayer was everything to him. And prayer is just a way of, you know, casting all our concerns on the Lord and letting the Lord get us through everything.
Many people today know how to pray.
Prayer can be learned. I think today people are afraid. They think, I don't know how to pray, and they leave it at that. But it can be learned. There's so many different techniques of prayer. One of the ones that Bonaventure proposes in his work, The Tree of Life, is to use your imagination. You know, the imagination is a wonderful gift that sometimes we think it's only for children, but it's not. Adults can use their imagination to make themselves present with Christ again. You know, to pick up a text from the Bible, for example, Jesus at the Last Supper, and to close your eyes, use your imagination, and imagine yourself sitting right beside Jesus at the Last Supper. What would that be like? What would that feel like? What would be the sounds and the sights you might experience being at the Last Supper? What would it be if Jesus broke off a piece of bread, handed it to you personally, and said, "This is my body"? What would you do? in the Tree of Life, Bonaventure proposes a lot of scenarios like that, of us entering into the scripture passage, not just reading it, but becoming part of it ourselves. And that's just one of the many ways that we can pray and get to know Jesus in a more intimate, personal way.
Anything about Bonaventure that brings him a bit more down to earth?
Bonaventure was so busy with the Franciscans and with his pastoral ministry. But the church saw the beauty of what he was doing, and popes were calling on him to help out with church teaching, help out at ecumenical councils. And he was kind of torn between all these opportunities. And they tried to make him a bishop early on, and he prevailed upon the pope not to force him, and he was able to turn down being Bishop of York. Later on in his life, though, they came a second time to make him a cardinal. And the story is told that when the papal delegates went to the friary where he was with the cardinal hat to present him with this new honor, he was there washing the dishes at the sink with the friars. And he just told the delegate, "I'll get to it in a minute, I just have to finish these dishes." And it's just kind of a nice story that tells you about his down-to-earth humility, not one to get puffed up by honors, but one who knew that being a leader in the church was all about service.
And many thanks there to Veronica Scaresbrick for that programme on the figure of St. Bonaventure, with the participation of Franciscan Father Rick Martignetti. A new handbook of best practices for the formation of priests was the subject of a recent course hosted by the Vatican's Congregation for Clergy. Chris Altieri spoke to two of the participants, who tell us more about the course and what they thought of it.
More than 100 seminary rectors from throughout the English-speaking world were gathered in Rome at the end of June and through the first week of July under the guidance and sponsorship of the Congregation for Clergy to discuss the revised handbook of best practices for the formation of seminarians. Known as the Ratio Fundamentalis Institutionis Sacerdotalis, Ratio Fundamentalis, or just Ratio for short, the latest edition of the document is titled On the Gift of Priestly Vocation. The basic and animating idea of the Ratio is that of helping seminaries all around the world to succeed in their mission of forming men for the priesthood by first firmly grounding them in a self-conscious attitude of missionary discipleship, and then giving them the tools to live their lives as disciples to the fullest, in and through the ministerial priesthood to which God calls them through His Church. Two participants in the course, the rector of St. Vincent de Paul Regional Seminary in Boynton Beach, Florida, Monsignor David Toops, and Monsignor Joseph Bechard, rector of Mount Angel Seminary in St. Benedict, Oregon, spoke with me, Chris Altieri, to share their impressions. Monsignor Toops begins the conversation by explaining why there was a need for a new document and how the new document has met that need.
Well, I think, first of all, it's been since the early 80s since we've had a Ratio Fundamentalis. So the fact that on December the 8th, 2016, the Congregation for Clergy produced the new Ratio, it's highly significant for us in the seminary world. And so from the 26th of June to the 7th of July, 120 formators from the English-speaking world gathered, really under the guidance of Archbishop Patron Wong of the Congregation for Clergy. And it's a tremendous document, and certainly Monsignor Bechard, who is here with me, we have been studying it since it was first given to us in December. I would say the most significant, there are two things to really look for as you read the Ratio Fundamentalis. The first is vocabulary, and the second is vision. Vocabulary, the art of accompaniment. How do we accompany men through the seminary to really lead them closer to Christ, help form them in the four dimensions of priestly formation, the human, the spiritual, the pastoral, the intellectual. So art of accompaniment kind of is a thread that flows all the way through, forming them to be missionary disciples. Certainly these are Christian terms, but terms that have been very much highlighted under the pontificate of Pope Francis. And then the vision is really that we are looking at the new formation process in four distinct stages. So Monsignor Betschart, would you like to say a word about those four stages, beginning with propaedeutic and ending with vocational synthesis?
As Monsignor said, the four stages of formation is kind of a new way to look at things. We had, at least in the States, we looked at it as terms of college and then pre-theology, theology, and now a bit more of a, say, comprehensive vision, starting with a propaedeutic period of time as a sort of a pre-formational, which I think is important in this, in the vision of this ratio, because it's really focused on forming the man to be first and foremost a disciple of Jesus Christ, based on his incorporation into Christ in baptism, and to be a disciple because, as the axiom goes, you can't give what you don't have, or grace builds on nature. In order to shepherd the people of God, you have to first of all be one of the people of God, be a brother among brothers before you can be a father. And so that propaedeutic year is really geared toward helping the man come to know himself, helping the man come to know the faith, helping the man come to know his diocese, the priest, the presbyterate that he will be joining, God willing, and continuing to grow and build. And then moving into the, in terms of initial formation, moving into the college, the philosophy, or the discipleship stage, focusing on just that, becoming more of a disciple of Jesus Christ in all four of the dimensions that Monsignor Toups mentioned, the human, the spiritual, the pastoral, and the intellectual, guided by the study of philosophy as part of it, but not limited to academic and not even focused on academic, I guess, but focused on all four stages, dimensions equally, to help us become a disciple. Then continuing into the theological stage and configuration to Jesus Christ, taking that disciple who's open to priesthood and to be formed into priesthood, and now concentrating on configuring him, forming him more and more into the image of Jesus Christ, the head and shepherd of the church, so that as he can act in his person, share in his person, put on the very perfections, the human perfections of Jesus Christ in himself, guided by the study of theology, and again, all four areas of formation. And then, lastly, the vocational discernment stage, vocational synthesis stage, in which a pastoral stage, in which all of the previous formation comes together generally a parish setting, in which one would be to serve once ordained, to bring that all together to be able to serve effectively the people of God.
I find the meatiness, if you will, of these titles, again, that's the novità, the newness, is no longer just referring to college or philosophy. We're calling it the discipleship stage. We're no longer just referring to their last 4 years of theology. We're calling it the configuration stage. So as a rector of a major seminary, Monsignor Joe and I both can vision how it is that we're going to do formation, focusing not so much on the academic title of what this period is. We're not just granting masters in divinity or STLs. We're really focusing primarily, obviously the intellectual will be a part of that, but we're helping the man to focus on, am I being the disciple Christ wants me to be? Am I being configured to Jesus Christ? And are we, as seminary formators, as rectors of seminaries, forming shepherds after the heart of Christ? And so I'm excited for the vision of the ratio, the new vocabulary that we need to help continue to form our faculty in, and the vision that we desire to share with our seminarians. And I think it's significant to note this gathering that we have spent the last 2 weeks participating in is very historic in a way. I'm not sure, as in talking to Archbishop Patron Wong and even in our audience with Cardinal Stella, And we had not only a meeting here at the Congregation of Clergy with him, but we also were able to celebrate Mass at St. Peter's with the Cardinal. This is really kind of the first of its kind, where the congregation has reached out directly to rectors to help us. They're not just imposing a document. They're accompanying us. They're walking with us to help us understand the vision. So really, I think all of us expressed on our last day deep gratitude to Cardinal Stella, to Archbishop Patron Wong, for wanting to journey with us, for sponsoring this program, tremendous generosity of the Holy See in inviting these 120 formators. So vision and vocabulary, those are the two real takeaways.
Those were the voices of U.S. Seminary rectors, Monsignor David Toops and Monsignor Joseph Bechart, interviewed by Chris Altieri. Across East Africa, around 16 million people face severe hunger because of drought, lack of food, and civil war. The UN has described this as the largest humanitarian crisis in more than 70 years. Nana Anto Awuaki, head of World News at the Catholic Development Agency CAFOD, has just returned from a visit to northern Kenya, where she saw at first hand how the devastating drought there is leaving people unable to put food on the table for their children. She was interviewed by Linda Bordoni.
We were travelling to northern Kenya to see the work of CAFOD's church partners in response to the devastating drought that's affecting around 2.7 million people. And when you see that figure, it's probably quite meaningless. It's only when you're actually in the field and you're meeting community members that tell you their very emotional stories of their survival. So in Isiolo, we saw how our church partners, Caritas Isiolo, are responding to that need by distributing food vouchers. And the women that told me, literally, they gave their children water to drink for the day, a cup of water, no food. A headmaster that told me about a little girl fainting in class who told him that she hadn't eaten for 2 days. So that worry about how will I feed my children, how will I keep my children alive, is amongst every single family member that we met. And we could see the impact of the work of Caritas Isiolo when family members, when particularly women told us, Caritas didn't forget about us. So we saw the impact of the food voucher scheme, where the vulnerable members of the community are identified by their own community, and then they receive a food voucher and so that they can simply feed their families. And while I was in the field in northern Kenya, I saw on my Twitter feed Pope Francis's commitment to giving money to support the East Africa crisis, and in particularly the situations in South Sudan and in Somalia.
That was Nana Anto Awuaki of the Catholic Development Agency, CAFOD, speaking to Linda Bordoni. And that's all we have time for today. Thanks so much for joining us here on Vatican Radio. I'm Susie Hodges, and until next time, Laudato Jesus Christus.